you were born in Manitoba, then?
Yeah, I was born in Manitoba, yes. And then we moved to Saskatchewan. Mm-hmm. And then Saskatchewan, I used to be working out for different farmers, you know.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So then I also I worked 3-4 years at the time in several different places. I came back to Manitoba. I stayed with my brother, and we worked for Colonel Sullivan. He used to own a duck pond here in Lebo. So we built dams there that winter. My brother had 2 surveyors boarding at his place. So after we finished that, I went started working on a farm again. So then I figured, well, there's no use. This was in 41. So I figured the war is ongoing pretty strong and it looked pretty bad, you know. So I went and enlisted.
Within the Grenadiers, you enlisted?
No, I enlisted. First I wanted to get in the reconnaissance. They were filled up. The Algonquins, they were filled up. So they says, well, take your basic training no matter what it is, and then after you get your basic training, then you can transfer to any other outfit.
About how old were you then?
I was 26. Yeah. So then I got my basic training, and just as we got through with our basic training, that's when the Grenadiers come back from Jamaica. They're coming back, and they wanted to, the idea was, when they come back from Jamaica, they were going to send them to Hong Kong to relieve the British. Because all they were doing, Grenadiers, they were just used to garrison duty, you see, guard duty. And they were already used to the tropics, so they thought they'd send them to Hong Kong to relieve the British there. So they were short of about 200 men or something when they come back from Jamaica. So we fellas that had passed our basic training, some didn't quite finish, some were just in shortly, you know. And
did you take your basic training in Winnipeg?
In Portage.
In Portage?
Portage Prairie, yeah. And we just got back to Winnipeg, then Grenadiers come back to Winnipeg. And so they said, this is your chance to transfer. If you want to transfer now, they need some volunteers for the Grenadiers. This one, okay, I said, seeing I can't get in the other outfit, so I'll go with the Grenadiers. So that's how I transferred to the Grenadiers.
About how long was your basic training?
6 weeks.
6 weeks, then? Eh? I'm just going to set this over a little bit. So,
just let us see how good.
Wow. Then you came back and of course you prayed and you volunteered for the Grenadiers.
Yeah, so then I transferred, got into the Grenadiers and
were you long before you left?
I don't remember too long. How long were before how long we were, you know, the Grenadiers, when they came back, I just don't remember exactly how long. They weren't in too long. They were very short, and then they were sent right over to it. It wasn't too long. They didn't hesitate too long. So then we, like I say, we took the train to Vancouver. From Vancouver, we took the boat. A Watea boat. An Australian boat. And we're on the water for about 18 days before we reach to Hong Kong, to Kowloon.
Can I ask what the basic training is like? Do you remember some of the things that you did train for?
Well, the basic training is like your drills and the Brent gun. It's, in case you got jammed up or something, just these minor things that you just... we didn't do no shooting of any kind. No live ammunition. I think just training, the drills, mainly the drill and a few machine gun practices, like in case you get jammed up and stuff like that, how to clean it and how to look after that part.
Mm-hmm.
So nothing else.
And then you went by train from Winnipeg to Vancouver.
Yeah.
Were there many on that train? Was it the troop train?
Oh yeah, troop train. Yeah. Troop train. The whole shebang.
And all your equipment was on the train?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't know what you call for equipment.
Well, what equipment did you take with you when you were coming?
Well, it's just our clothes. That's all. No other equipment that I know of. I mean, as far as equipment, what equipment could you take? I mean, it's just your armor clothes.
About the trucks.
No. I don't remember of anything like that. No. Well, maybe there was, but we didn't know. At least, you know, I don't think so anyway.
Can I ask what rank you were?
I was just a private, yeah. Okay. I just passed through. Still a private.
Right. And were you assigned to a regiment at that time?
No. Like I say, I wanted to get an Algonquin or the reconnaissance. And they were filled up. I couldn't get into them outfits. So they said, well, you've got to go through your basic training anyway. So take your basic training, then you can transfer to some other outfit, whatever you want. So in the meantime, I was in the Little Black Devils, taking training with the Little Black Devils. Mm-hmm. So in case I didn't get a transfer to any of the other outfits, I was going to stay with the Little Black Devils. Mm-hmm. But then, like I say, the Grenadiers come along, so I wanted to go to the Grenadiers. Mm-hmm.
The boat going over, you said, was Australian?
Yeah, Australian boat. I was here.
Were you in Vancouver very long before you...
No, we no sooner got there, we took the boat right away.
Do you remember much about the crossing? Had you ever been to the ocean, on the water before?
No, I was sick as a dog. Oh, I was seasick half of the way. Oh, I was sick. I was seasick right up to almost to Hawaii. And I just started to get better, and then we stopped at Hawaii to get fresh water or something. Anyway, they stopped at Hawaii for something. And after they stopped and got going again, I took seasick again. And I just started to get used to it, and then after it stopped again and got moving again, I got sick until we landed into Kowloon.
Well, when you arrived in Kowloon, were there barracks assigned to you, or did you training?
There was barracks there, and they moved us right to those barracks. Yeah, and we were taking some training there. Yeah. Also some drills, kept up with our drills, not too much with the drills, and some of the machine guns again, like I said, but there wasn't many guns, and we never fired any live ammunition or anything. Never went rifle ranges or anything. And then I was taking training for in case we get gassed. Mm-hmm. I was attached because I was an HQ company, and I was like what they call the pioneer section. Pioneer section, that's like a jack of all trades. You know, you help set up camps and take stuff comes in, and you got to help take it apart and set it up and find place for cooking and set up toilets and stuff like that. You know, look after that. So that was, and then I also took up. About gas, anybody gets gas or anything, I took training for, I forgot even what I had to do at that time, to tell the truth. So, that was my job. They contaminate the people and stuff like that.
Do you remember if you expected that the Japanese were going to attack?
No. We had no idea at all. Because they were talking that should war declare. But, should war declare that there'd be no such thing as taking prisoner of war, because the Japanese never took prisoner of war in history. So, I mean, that didn't make us feel any too good for it. But we thought it's just strictly to relieve the British, because because they were there doing garrison duty, so that's what we had in mind. But we weren't there too long before we did develop a war. We got there. October. We got there about the 18th or 19th of November. Then about within a month's time, a war declared. Something like that, around between the 14th or 18th of December, and it finished on the 24th of December. So we weren't too long in action, but there was nothing to fight with to begin with anyway. Wasn't much to fight with. Because we didn't know whether it was something following us that's coming to bring us ammunition and whatnot to fight with. We didn't know. And they say it was supposed to be coming, but never reached us. And what they had to fight with, there wasn't much to speak of. They ran out of a lot of things.
Can you remember how the people? You'd never seen the ocean before. You'd never been to China or anything.
No.
Can you remember much about the experience? Do you remember
Well, the food, we were on an Australian boat, we had nothing but mutton three times a day. mutton, my God, was that ever sickening. Well, and to be seasick and eat nothing but mutton all the time, that didn't help matters any either.
And then when you got to Hong Kong, do you remember what the people, the good experiences with the people?
Well,
or did you have much to do with them?
We didn't have much to do with them. All we did is went downtown and we went to the clubs, the pubs, or whatever you call them. And that's the only thing, you know, we weren't out there too long to get acquainted with anybody because, well, a soldier is a soldier. All he knows is go to the pub right away. Any place, go to a show, go to a pub or something, that's all you. So you didn't get around to know anybody, too many people. So civilian people, we had nothing to do with them.
Do you remember what you were doing when the battle broke out, when the war first started, or when you first heard of the war starting? Do you remember how you heard it?
Well, all they did was about 9-10 o'clock in the morning, and the plane come over and bombed the docks. They said war is declared, so they moved us from Kowloon over to the island. Some of the boys were there, and quite a few were left on the island, so they had to transfer them to. On a ferry over to the island. So, and that was near. Yeah, must have been. And then that night, late at night, is when the Japs broke, came through. They landed. There was a great big ship loaded with soldiers, and we saw the ship that they came on, and they landed right into the bank of Hong Kong. You know, that's how they
on the shoreline.
Over. Yeah, on the shoreline. Their boat this time, because after the war, we seen that boat there. They came and took torches and everything, cut all the steel off it and everything, and left it there.
Well, I guess the fighting went on for 17 days.
Yeah. And like we were spread all over the hills, we didn't know where half of the bunch was. You know, one bunch fighting there, one bunch fighting there, and. A lot of times we couldn't. There was three or four days without food. Then after we got a little bit of food. Then after, when the war was over, they had to surrender and call it no water. They captured the water, the wars, and what? Because we couldn't get no water anymore. And that's how I think it's. That's how we surrendered. Was in call it water.
Can you remember what the men thought of the officers, the non-commissioned officers?
Well, this is hard to say. What I heard, a lot of boys, they had coincidence with their officers and everything. I didn't have any problems because, in fact, I was on guard duty in right at the main headquarters. It was three of us, myself, McIntyre, and Bill Taylor. I know it was a Taylor. I know it was fifth name. It was Taylor and McIntyre and myself. We done through the hottest action. We did the guard duty right at the headquarters. And then even then, when it got so hot, all our officers left and left us on our own. We didn't even know what happened, where they went or anything until, this was late at night, and then towards morning, we're marching, to find out where they all disappeared to. So we come to a bunch of soldiers and that, got in a group. So, then they would have to take positions again, to different places. We got all spread out again. I got took position with Captain Dennis. So quite a few of us, I forget how many men we were, 20, maybe a little more, maybe less. I forget how many of us were. We took shelter in a house, in a big home. And that night, we stayed that night in that house. Then next morning, come daylight, we took our positions in a lawn, all over the yard and everything, you know, for watch out for action, got prepared, waiting for action. But just then they spotted us, they start shelling us. So the one shell landed, didn't quite, some got hit, wounded. Another shell come, so by the time the third one come, everybody took his own directions. And after that, and that was the day that it ended. Everybody took his own direction. We got all split up because we couldn't, you know, you have to scramble.
Yeah.
And some guys, there's a fellow I was with, he says, kid, he says, we're going to stick together until, you know, right to the end. You know, we weren't going to part, you know, we'll stick together. Heck, even right there, we split up that he wound up for about 6 months in Bono the hospital. I didn't see him for about 6 months after. Mm-hmm. See, we all took our own directions.
Were you wounded?
No, thank God I wasn't wounded, no. I was scared of that. In fact, I took a nosedive from that cliff where I was, about 40, 50 feet, maybe more, down the cliff. It's a big embankment, and there's a road down below, and I threw my respirator off because I couldn't slide my stomach. I tore off my respirator and hung it to one side here. I threw it over my back. I forget what I did with it, but I had to tear it off here, and I took my grenade pouches, a shell box. I had to pull that apart so I can slide down my stomach. I slid down that bank, and I'm telling you, I even when there was a sand pile there, I even dove head first into a sand pile. I was so scared.
Do you remember much of the surrender or what happened after the Army surrendered?
Well, when we surrendered, they started getting the boys all together and everything. So what else could we do? Mm-hmm. Got us all together, rounded us up, and that was on that 24th of December. There wasn't much we could do. And we stayed in the barracks right there in Hong Kong. There was a barracks there, and we stayed there. And it sure wasn't a wonderful feeling either. After the war was over and they rounded us all up and everything else, and you hear that we know that they're not going to take prisoner of war. So they got their soldiers all lined up and everything, and here's us all lined up, so we just figured they're going to mow us all down, you know. But this Japanese officer says, boys, he says, you boys put up a wonderful fight, he says. We're like good soldiers, he says. You boys put up a wonderful fight, he says. See that you obey our orders and everything, you boys shall be well looked after. He says, we never took prisoners of war, but he says, you boys put on a wonderful fight. He says, we lost about 10 men to your one or something, he says. He says, obey our camp orders, our rules, and he says, you shall be well looked after. And I'm telling you, we're putting one much. You know, because you expect him to get all mowed down, and here he comes out with a thing like that.
Yeah.
This was a wonderful feeling after all, but it wasn't very nice, you know, losing. You didn't fight very long, but the thing was, I had nothing to fight with. Couldn't keep him back. Broken here, broken there, broken there. Ammunition dump. They have to evacuate from whatever they did have. What little bit they did have, they have to light it and run away from it because they didn't want them to get a hold of it. Because I could see it right from the headquarters where we were.
Did you ever find out where the officers went when they left?
No, I didn't even ask for anything. No, they just... that's another thing. Why didn't they warn us? We're on guard duty. Why didn't they tell us we're there, that they're leaving, evacuated the place altogether? They never said a word. Yeah. Here we're left there, dumbfounded. Where are we going to go? What are we going to do? So we just took off on our own too. Mm-hmm. Until we run into them. Mm-hmm. Not only the officers, but a whole bunch of them. Well, I guess they panicked and they took off without even letting us know.
You'd fought for, I guess, 16 days by the time you said that there wasn't much food.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. A lot of boys couldn't get food because they'd get wiped out and food wouldn't reach there. And what made it bad, when it came nighttime over there, it got pitch black. You couldn't see a thing. You couldn't see a hand in front of your face. No lights of any kind, and when darkness, and in those mountains, you couldn't see a thing, I'm telling you.
Do you remember if the weather was cold? Or?
No. Mm-hmm. Wasn't enough that was that cold. It's just like the beginning of a fall here. Or cool weather. It's just like the beginning of a fall.
Well, as a prisoner of war, you stayed in Hong Kong during the rest of
No, we stayed in Hong Kong after the war was over for a couple of months or so, I guess, maybe not even that long. See, that's what I mean. It's hard to remember, the month or 2 months or something.
Yeah.
We were so confused and everything. And then they moved us right back to our own barracks in Kowloon.
This was right after the surrender?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Did you go back by barge or by boat?
Well, I guess some kind of a barge or boat, say, you can't even remember what it was, you know.
Yeah.
Must have been some kind of barge. Yeah, come to think of it, yeah, it was a pretty good size boat, yeah. Because I remember I had, the minute I got off the boat, I had to run right at the dock and everything. I had diarrhea, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I had so bad, so I couldn't even wait until I had to run and do it. Because we were all pretty sick by then. Half of the camp had diarrhea and dysentery by then.
Would this be from water or from food?
From the water, I guess, and food. Well, we never drank cold water. We never had water to drink then. Never drank cold water for all the while we were prisoner of war. Never had a cold drink of water. Couldn't drink cold water. All we had was cold, they called it tea. It's just a bunch of shrubs, boiled shrub, and made tea out of it. But you couldn't drink, touch cold water, no. I guess it wasn't fit to be drank, and I don't know what they could have done is boil it and let it cool off, eh? But they had no refrigeration or anything, so how are you going to drink that kind of water? You might as well drink something hot, and you can't drink just hot, cold, hot water, so they made sort of a tea out of it.
What about the boys that were wounded? Were they looked after with the Japanese, or did you have to look after them?
We had our own, they had our own medical. I don't know if someone told you that anything about some of the wounded that were during action. The Japanese came over to the hospital where some of our wounded were, and they bayoneted them right there. And one of our medical officers was there, Dr. Crawford, I think it was. And he was pretty scared. So what could he do? They bayoneted him right there and everything, and he thought he was going to get it too. So just shortly after here, a Japanese officer comes in. And he showed him, look what your soldiers did to our wounded boys here. They bayoneted them, killed them right there. And the Japanese officers, they shot off their own men right there. They shot off their own men. And then he tells our Dr. Crawford, he says, that goes for you too. He says, if you don't do anything right, he says, that goes for you too. You know, so. But they were really strict in Japanese. You know? Their soldiers done anything wrong, they got beat up in the spot, or they got it right there. They didn't have like us guys go to detention or something like that. They got punished twice.
Were there many medical supplies available?
Well, maybe at first there was, but then that ran out. You know, that is what we had of our own there, and that ran out. And then after we had a hard time to get anything from them, they just issued so much, and that's it for certain sicknesses. Yeah.
You stayed in the Kowloon camp for a number of months.
Yeah, for almost 2 years. Almost 2 years in Hong Kong, and we're just on the verge of 4 years. It was 3 years and 9 months exactly prisoner of war. It took four full years by the time I got back. I left 25th of October and come back 25th. 4 years to a day. But, the war ended sometime in September, August. What is it? August the 14th? 16th. See, we didn't get back till October. So I figured those 3 months there that we were in prisoner of war. But rice, nothing but rice. 3 times a day rice.
Was there much of a routine? Did you get up at a certain time?
Oh yeah. It's just like in the army. You got up at a certain time in the morning, had a roll call and everything else. Then after they had us working, first at Kowloon, they decided to build an airfield. So, naturally, we put us to work and we made an airfield. So, after that was done, we had nothing to do, so then they decided to start moving us to Japanese camps, to Japan. So, the the ones that weren't in too bad a shape were able to, that were, you know, were mobile more or less. They picked out the best ones and that, and they start moving into Japan. Then we start working mines and factories there. Some were in stevedore work, some were in mines, some were in factories. Oh, it was all different kind of work.
What kind of work did you do in the
mines? In mines. Mines and factories.
What kind of mine was it? Coal mines?
No, it was raw ore. You tear down a mountain, fill up cars and dump it into cars and they haul that away. Then you got to go and dump it. And after that goes to the factory. Then after it's reprocessed, then you got to go and shovel that, those little, it's the size of a buckshot and the size of peas and that after it comes out, after it's melted, you know. Then we've got to go and shovel that here and there. Or keep the furnaces stoked up, shoveling coal into the furnaces. Or also have to shovel coal, fill up the bins for the furnaces. So you got to go to the coal pile and shovel coal all day. And they haul this coal into the factory.
Was it
was continuous one kind of thing after another.
Was it hard work?
Oh, yeah. Because we're all so run down, you're just skin and bone and forever starving, forever hungry. And then you couldn't sleep, couldn't get decent sleep because we had, in Hong Kong, it was nothing but bed bugs. You couldn't sleep for bed bugs. And in Japan, you couldn't sleep for fleas. You couldn't, you're here, you're dead tired, and you can't even get a decent sleep in front of bed bugs. And and in Japan, it was nothing but fleas. Oh,
dear.
Do
you remember how many were working with you at the time?
Oh, yeah, it was. Because, see.
It was all Canadian?
No. When they send 100 or a couple of hundred to a place in Japan, they put about 25 Canadians, 25 British. We had some a Dutch Navy there. We had some Dutch. So they mixed a few Dutch and a few British and a few Canadians. They mixed them all up.
And did the officers too?
Yeah, officers too. Yeah. It didn't make no difference. Officers, yeah, pilots. Just whoever they felt like sending, they just sent.
Would there be anybody in charge of?
Yeah, we had in our camp we had Sergeant Major Tugby and what's it called? Harvey. He was a Corporal Harvey. Then he was made into a sergeant while you were a prisoner of war then. He was only a private, but he was the smartest one of them all. He could speak Japanese and that. He was the one that he was the in the whole camp he was the commander. He was the leader of them.
Was he Canadian?
No, he was a British chap. He was British. But he was very smart, yeah.
What would happen if you tried to break out of camp? Is there anybody that would try?
Yeah, there is. There's three fellows that did try to break out, and we heard they got. They used them for bayonet practice. Yeah. And three or four, yeah. I'm not sure it was three. It was a Brzezinski. I knew the names, but I forgot the names. Okay. And two from the medical, they were in the medical corps. Because in fact, they worked in the hospital when we were there. But this one fella, he was just a fact. He went along with him. I don't know what made him go with him.
Did you work a long day, like early in the morning?
Yeah, we had to do our 8 hours.
8 hours a day.
Yeah.
Would you get any days off?
Just weekends, just Sundays. Just Sundays.
Would you get mail from home?
Oh, they're very, very seldom. There was a few times that the boys got some mail, very few times. There was no mail coming through, not the speaker. Yeah, well, you take right after we surrendered, when we got back to Kowloon,
Well, our second man to die in camp was our colonel. He was so worried about us. He was so disappointed and everything else. I think it hit him the hardest because, after all, he seemed to be in such physically fit shape. And yet, why should he be the second man to die in camp? I guess he died of worry or something. I can't figure it out. And then after that, we started getting different sicknesses. We started to get diarrhea. We started to get some kind of skin disease. And then we got these electric feet, hot feet. Well, God, it drives you crazy. We had the only comfort we could get is plugging the holes in the showers and fill it up with cold water and sit in cold water there all day long and all night long.
Your feet would be hot?
Well, so hot that it drives you crazy. Yeah. And it finally got to that half of the camp. I think more than everybody in camp had it. Maybe not. I wouldn't say everybody, but I'd say three-quarters of the camp had it. But everybody had it. See, the malnutrition started hitting us, one thing after the other. Some kind of a skin disease broke out.
What was it, like a rash? Or?
Yeah. Oh, geez, some guys, I know some guys are like leopards right now. A fellow there that I know, the Paul Arsenic. Oh my God, he was terrible. He was just like a leopard. Some guys, I had a rash. It was driving me crazy with the itch and everything else and that, you know, but mine didn't last too long. I got over that. But some had it worse. And then the ones that got diphtheria. Well, there's some that, when they got diphtheria, on top of that skin disease, it really made it tough. Because it hit in the most sensitive places, you know. But like I say, these hot feet, oh my God, they were terrible. It's driving us out of our mind. And then, diphtheria broke out. We lost quite a few men during that time, and diphtheria cases went, diphtheria came to camp.
Were the Japanese getting these diseases also? Would it be just prisoners?
We don't know nothing. We don't know nothing about the Japanese, but if they had it or the Chinese had it or anything, because
you really had no outside information.
No, we couldn't get nothing from the outside. Really. I know I had a sore throat. I thought I was going to get diphtheria, but lucky I was able to get a hold of some rock salt, and I was sucking on rock salt because I know my throat was really sore. But I didn't get diphtheria, but I had a sore throat. But like I say, I was sucking on rock salt. And I think that's prevented me from getting diphtheria. But I got double pneumonia after in Japan. I had double pneumonia that time. I had abscessed teeth at the time. I couldn't see out of this eye for 3 months or more. I was swollen right down to my belly button all the way. I had no chin. I couldn't move my head sideways, up and down or anything. Here I've been lanced here. I had two tubes in there. I lived on rice water for 3 months, sucking through my tooth here. Lived on rice water, rice liquids, for over 3 months.
Wait, was this from malnutrition?
No, it was. I got an abscess tooth then, and then while I had this abscess tooth, that's when I got double pneumonia. So I went into the hospital, what they call a hospital. I went in the middle of December. I didn't get out till sometime in April with this pneumonia. And there's quite a few of us. Well, there's three of us got pneumonia at that same time as I did. The other two boys didn't survive, didn't make it. And I got mine. I was at a work party, and I was going to a dentist, to a civilian Japanese dentist. The guard would take us down, would take me down. Mm-hmm. I'd get looked after, and then he'd bring me back. So it was a kind of a drizzly day, drafty and that, and that's probably how I got my pneumonia. While waiting in line, there's such a big lineup, and the building we're in, the draft is hitting through, and I think that's how I got my pneumonia. Because when I come back to camp, then I got the shivers. I start shivering and that, and just at that time, when I come back to the factory where we were working, we had to hit for the air raid shelter. Plane come over and we had to hit for the air raid shelter. So we had to stay for about a half an hour or more in the air raid shelter, and was drafted there too. So that's how I got my pneumonia.
Was this an American plane?
We couldn't tell what kind of plane. Yeah. You can't see through them over the mountains. Yeah. You hear a plane, but you can't see them. Because there's mountains all over. You're just working here. It's, you know, it's a rough country. It's all hills.
Had you been bombed at that time?
No. We could hear planes flying, but what they were doing, I mean, we were scared. We didn't know whether it was our planes or Japanese planes or what they were. But you see, it's too many mountains. You can hear them, but you can't see them. But when they hear planes, the Japanese make us take cover. They think, you know, it's American planes. So whether they were American planes or ours, or their own planes, we couldn't tell. The only time we could tell is when that bomb landed. We knew there was some because we heard the rumble and the thunder, like a thunder, you know.
Which bomb was it?
The atomic bomb, yeah. Yeah, that was about 70 miles from our camp.
Yeah, and you heard it go off?
We heard a noise. We saw the lights too, like, you know, through the mountain. It's just like a bright sunrise, you know. Mm-hmm. You could see it over the mountains. We could see the, just like a bright sunrise.
Mm-hmm. You wouldn't know what it was?
No, we didn't. Well, we didn't know. And the thing was, when that did happen, on our work party, see, every afternoon, this happened in the afternoon, and it was our 3 o'clock break. We get a 15-minute break in the morning, and we get a 15-minute break in the afternoon. Our 15 minutes were up, but nobody's telling us to go back to work. An hour went by, still nobody come and letting us know to go back to work. What the heck is this? 5 o'clock come, not a soul around. So we knew that something must be it. So everybody went nuts, and they figured, well, that's it, because not a Jap inside any. They took off like rabbits. And we had to go in and into camp on our own, and we never saw any Japs from then on.
Were you working in the mine this
time? Yeah. And like I say, they just took off. We didn't whistle, and that's how we knew it's over. But they never come and told us, well, this is over and this and that. Apparently they got scared of us or something because they just took off. Because, you see, they couldn't speak English anyway. We had an interpreter there. But he wasn't around at that time. And I guess he got scared too when he buzzed off because he figured that, you know, we're going to take after him or something. So we went in and so figured that's it and that's the way. And I'm telling you, and we were there a few days, still nothing, you know, don't hear nothing from nobody, and then a couple of 3 days after, some planes start coming over and start dropping food stuff. American planes come over and dropping Red Cross stuff, you know, food. And they told us to stay there until further notice, until they let us know when to, they'd come and release us, and what, you know, we had no information of any kind, we didn't know what to do. I think so. We just had to stay there, and they kept on dropping more food and more food, and we just stayed there. So we stayed there for quite a while.
Those would be, I guess, quite happy days.
Oh, that was happy days, yeah. But like, I don't know how a lot of our boys, how they ever pulled through that diarrhea, dysentery, with all these these bad feet and this beriberi. There was the wet one. There was the dry one. The wet one, you get up some mornings, you can't put your shoes on, you can't put your pants on, your legs, your feet are all swollen, you can't get nothing off, blow up like a balloon. Well, you can put on, we've heard some, whether that's true or not, but a lot of guys, they can put on, they put on 100 pounds overnight, so that very, very swell up so bad. Oh yeah, you just blow up, your legs are like stovepipes. And then you get, after the wet one, the wet one wasn't too bad, at least you were swollen up there, but when you got the dry one, that choked you to death. That was just like you have a tight rope around your chest or something, you start turning it tighter and tighter and tighter. If you lied on your back, you couldn't roll over. You just couldn't move. It was just a tight tension that you just couldn't move. And that was something before you got relief of that. Like I say, good thing that some of these things didn't last too long. lasted about a week, 2 weeks, and some guys would get in the chest, some guys in the groin, and some would get it in the throat. The ones that got it in the throat, they choked to death. I know right behind me was a chap that choked to death. He was coughing, he was frothing at the mouth, he was choking, and finally just choking. So this, the dry one was worse, much worse than the wet one. Mine hit me in a little from the chest, started downwards into my groins. I couldn't walk, I couldn't roll over in bed either. I just stayed there, just such a... It's, you can't explain it. You just think you have the whole building on top of you. If you try to move it, you just impossible. You think the whole, everything was on top of you. Impossible to move. You just, your eyeballs rolling around, and that's about all.
You mentioned that it was American planes that dropped the Red Cross pencils. Was it American soldiers that came to the King's Pencil? Were you liberated by American soldiers?
Well, it's the Americans that were giving us the information, you know, to stay there until we get released. Mm. And, when we got released, I don't even know who came to get us. Mm. Whether you're British or who, or I don't know how we even got out of there. Somehow I lost track how we left that camp. Mm. I know we went by train, that I know. But how... When we left our camp, how we went by trucks or march or anything, I don't even remember.
And where did you go from?
From there we went to a place, someplace in Tokyo, someplace in Japan. Then we had to wait a while there too, and went by, also by train again. I don't know, we had quite a journey by train.
Do you remember how you were treated?
Well, at that time we were treated good. Right after the war, we were treated good, oh yeah. Were treated good because we were more or less every place we went there was already the Americans were there, and they were giving us better clothes and already their own cooking and stuff like that. Then from a certain place, I don't even remember what place in Japan, that we from there we left by plane to Guam. We flew by plane to Guam, and we stayed in Guam for about a week, a couple of weeks. It wasn't too long. And then we took the boat from Guam to right. We landed in San Diego. It was also a journey about 8 days from Guam to San Diego.
Did you get sick on the boat?
Nope. This time it wasn't. It was a smaller boat, a different size boat or something. Didn't make me sick that time.
And then from San Diego you came up to...
Yeah. And when we're coming, when we left Guam, we're on this boat. There was a bunch of officers on the boat that I was on. So another boat came along and took all the officers from our boat and onto this other boat. And doggone if I didn't lose all my equipment, all my belongings, all that I had. I had souvenirs even that I was hiding away from the Japs for all the while I was prisoner of war. And all the stuff that they dropped and everything, and I bought some bunch of stuff. Doggone if I didn't lose everything.
Somebody pick up your...
Picked mine up by mistake. Mm-hmm. I was all excited. I left it in a big dormitory there, on a boat there, in a big square there. And I went up on deck to see if I can see anybody in this other boat, some of my friends. And then my... never even thought of my stuff, you know. After I came down, shortly after I wanted something, I was looking for it. And they tried to get it. They wired, they signaled to the other boat, and they signaled. And after I come back here to Canada, they were still after it, and I never got a thing out of it. Lost everything I possessed. All I got was $75 check for all my personal belongings. And I had $1,000 in cash money.
This would be back paying?
That was Japanese money. Because I had 300 and some on me in my shirt pocket, and the rest I had it in my little haversack with my shaving stuff.
How did you get the Japanese
money? When we were working over there, we were getting paid, you know. Mm-hmm. We were getting paid, was it like 15 cents? Not cents, this is cents. Mm-hmm. Then 25 cents a day. 15 cents is for a private, 25 cents for a senior. Could be a sergeant or officer or anybody. And if you work so many days, they put you what they call high pay. You got 25 cents a day. That's like 25 cents a day. But so every week or a couple of weeks they pay us. I forget if it was a couple of weeks or a month. Anyway, we got paid. But then you couldn't buy nothing. Sometimes they bring in cigarettes. Well, we're able to buy a few cigarettes or curry powder or something like that, put on the rice. But even then, you couldn't get that. We saved some money. And then towards the end there, we had Koreans that used to work in the mines and factories beside us. And we started selling all our clothes that we didn't need, like blankets and all that. We sold it to the Koreans. $50 a blanket, $50 for shoes, $50 for this. That's how I got all this money. Because they were going to raid it anyway. We couldn't take them blankets and stuff with us. Yeah. So that's how we got rid of it. So we made a few dollars in there.
Was there much of a welcome when you came to Canada?
Oh, we were welcome all over. When we started coming back, when we landed from Guam, we were welcomed by the Americans. When we come back to Vancouver, took us to Victoria. We stayed there while we couldn't even buy nothing. Everything was given to us all over. We got, when we landed in Victoria, that's where we got our issue of uniforms. Just like a real Canadian soldier should be, because we're dressed every kind of way. We're dressed like Americans all the way through there until we hit Victoria. So then they give us our uniforms, real Canadian uniforms with our what you call them, flashes on. And we stayed in Victoria for a couple of weeks and then came back here. Yes, that was one happy day.
Can I ask how you feel about the treatment that you received from the government and for the pensions and that?
Well, I was in pretty tough shape when I come back. I come back in October, I got discharged in May, and during the time after I got my discharge, I was out for a couple of weeks, I get slapped in the hospital for a couple of weeks. Get slapped in again for a couple of weeks, slapped out, then I go out for a week, couple of weeks or a month. It just kept on 2 weeks or a month, I'd get in a hospital. I had land picked out in Russell, I was going to go farming, and I thought, well, heck, with the condition I'm in, and that, how am I going to go farming? And I had such a good opportunity to go farming. My best man was from there, and any soldier settled there. All the farmers, they chipped in, and they put in their crop and take it off for 3 years. Give a veteran a start. Well, I felt so rough and everything, I thought, well, heck, how am I going to go farming? The condition I was in, month in, month out, month in, 2 weeks in, 2 weeks out. And then the last time I got slapped in for 3 months straight. Well, that did it. And I walked out of the lodge, which was a bad mistake.
You just walked out of the hospital?
Yeah, I couldn't take it anymore. Mm-hmm. Couldn't stand it anymore. I walked out, and after that was in February, and after I get out of there, then I get pleurisy. Well, I was going to have these. Yeah, then I got pleurisy. And I wouldn't go back to hospital. I had a doctor from the commercial village, pension doctor, used to come over and see me. Because I wouldn't go to the hospital. I'm so fed up with hospitals.
Shut it off. I guess it was about 3.5 years you spent in prison, was it? 4 years?
3 years, 9 months.
3 years, 9 months. And since you've come back, I understand there have been quite a few things that you just haven't felt well at all.
Yeah, well, I've been feeling rough all the while. I couldn't get no weight. First I was run down, couldn't put no weight on. Because I can't eat a decent meal, and and like my feet is bothering me or killing me all the time, because I'm kind of my blood circulation, and my ulcer was bothering me.
Did you get your ulcer in camp, or was
that? I don't know what they did. I was troubled with my stomach when I came back, and I guess they didn't give me tests for ulcer, but I was complaining for, well, I went with stomach trouble for years before they finally detected it. Mm-hmm. I went there, and they gave me x-rays, and the proper ulcer tests, but they couldn't detect nothing. Year after year, I told them, I can't eat, there's something wrong. And I don't know, well, then I was supposed to go for what they call a reboard, another real good check over. So anyway, I had to take pills, certain pills for the kidneys or something, or gallstones or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. Anyways, you have to take so many pills according to your weight for this certain test. I don't know what test it is. But anyway, while I took those pills, I developed an awful dose of diarrhea. And I had a diarrhea, and I had to take them pills on a Sunday after Sunday 6 o'clock, and I had diarrhea all that night, all day Monday, and Tuesday morning I went for this X-ray, and all that time I had diarrhea. By that time, I guess my stomach was so flushed up, that's how they detected. Finally, the ulcer showed up.
Mm-hmm.
So I was on a diet, ulcer diet, for 3-4 years, and I sort of, well, more than that. I watched my diet for a long time. So now they can see a scar there. You know, whether it's still an ulcer there or what, but they say there's still a scar there. So you don't know if it's an ulcer or what, there's a scar there. Well, I says, it must be better because I can eat things now which I was never able to eat before. So that part's okay. But then, like I say, then I went for a test again. Like, I got a pain in my stomach here, so I went twice within 3 years apart. They give me a test. So my hernia is still the same. My stomach is still shrunken, still the same. And
how about your nerves? Can you use
that? It's just my nerves. My nerves got getting worse and worse. Because the way I feel kind of rough and this and that, and you're kind of worried about that you might get hurt in a job or something, because you're always working in attention and anxiety and whatnot, and it sort of builds up a nervous tension, I think, or something. And gradually my nerves started to get worse and worse until they struck the right nerve pills, and that's finally calmed me down. But then still.
You're taking quite a few pills each day.
Yeah. I'm on heavy medication for nerves, yes.
You've been able to work, though, since you came back, even though you've been in and out of the hospital.
Yeah, well, that's... And while the doctors tell me, too, that's the only thing to keep me going is work. Like I told my sons, I want to quit work. They says, you'll be sorry, because that's the only thing to do in your case, because your blood circulation and your arthritis and loss of appetite. And if I sit at home doing nothing, I'll just deteriorate the fast.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of times I don't feel good or anything, but I still go to work anyway to keep going, you know, because of my arthritis and blood circulation and that. So I keep going. I've just been battling year after year. Now I want to quit even, and I still can't make up my mind what to do.
Can I ask what you feel towards the government?
Well, I can't say too much about the government. I guess they tried their best and everything, I don't know. They're all trying their best and still seem to get nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
I guess there's one more thing.
Only one thing I was hurt was about our pension, that we should have got a half decent pension when we first come back.
Mm-hmm.
To give us, you know, to at least boost our morale up, that at least they're trying. At least give you a half decent pension out of the deal, not waiting until when you're just about had it the last few years and they start bringing it up.
And I guess there's one more. I wonder how you feel towards the Japanese people today.
I have no hard feelings about them at all.
Yeah.
No. I mean, we they treated us the best way they could, because we seen ourselves how they were fed. They weren't fed any better than we were. So they had nothing to eat themselves. What they gave us is because they couldn't afford any better. And as far as having hard feelings against them, war is war, and I have to see Japanese people or anything, I hold no grudge of any kind. No. I got beat up when I was prisoner of war, I got beat up several times, but that's got nothing to do with it.
Wait, was this by the Japanese?
Yeah. Well, once by the Japanese and once by our own seniors. I got beat up by a Japanese on account, like I was telling you, couldn't sleep on account of fleas.
Yeah.
I pinned up my pajama cuffs real tight so the fleas can't sneak in. And then and every evening we have a roll call. The Japanese officer came in, took our roll call, and after roll call you're supposed to take your clothes off and massage yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So just what they call for a good circulation, especially during the winter months. Well, we have to do it year round, especially for, you know, winter months, we have to really massage ourselves. So here, I had these things pinned up, and he walked out, and we had to come, you know, take our clothes off, start massaging. In the meantime, I took unbuttoned here, and I come to take it off, and I couldn't take my thingy off because it's pinned up. I had to throw it back on again to start all over again.
Mm-hmm.
In the meantime, he turns back and he catches me with my pajamas still on. He put the boots to me. I still got fractured ribs here. When he kicked me, I fell against the shelf there where we kept our clothes on. And after the roll call, he came back again and made our sergeant Sergeant Harvey. He had to slap me around right in front of him again. So I got beat up twice the same night.
I guess there wouldn't be any happy memories of prison camp. I just wonder if you can think of any funny things that happened.
No, there's nothing funny that ever happened.
Was there ever much laughter in camp?
Well, some of our boys used to try and put on sort of a concert and have some. Yeah, we had some concerts, stuff like that for pastime, for a little bit of for fun. But we didn't have anything to put on fun with. Like we only had one guitar or something in the camp. And Sergeant that was in charge of the camp, he was the one that done all the singing and playing to entertain us. Well, we had a few comedians there that come on stage and tell a few jokes and stories and a few silly acts. Oh, yeah. They try to keep our morale up. But
there's one other thing. I happen to be reading a Hong Kong newspaper, Hong Kong Times, dated 1942. And it happened to mention that the Japanese were making a film about the occupation of Hong Kong. Do you ever remember anything about that at all? Or whether they actually did? Well, did you get newspapers at all?
I don't take a paper, no, because I don't read in front of my eyes. I just listen to all the news and stuff.
Yeah. How about in camp?
No, we never got no news of any kind. No, we had no radio or anything. I think there was an odd time, maybe they had a radio on camp, but we had to walk so close that they don't catch us with anything like that. But you couldn't get no news. No. Never heard no news all the while we were there.
Well, I guess that's it. If you have anything else to add, if not, I thank you very much for that.
Stop it for a minute, please.
Yeah, another thing, in Hong Kong after the war, that we had to sleep on cement floors. You know, there was no such thing as cement floors. And then, maybe a year after, they got some of the old army beds. Then they brought some of them in, but you had no mattresses, you had nothing to sleep on anyway, so they were no good either. And then when we got shifted to Japan, well, they had these straw mats, they call them tatamis, 2 inches, about 2 inches thick, but they were just as hard as a rock, and you had nothing to do, you might as well sleep like sleeping on the floor. We have such calluses in our hips here from sleeping on them damn things. And those, in Japan, those rice mats, well, they were just loaded with fleas. Well, that's why you couldn't get a decent night's sleep on account of those mats being loaded with fleas.
Was there any way of getting rid of the fleas?
They issued us some powders and this and that, but that didn't work. There's too many of them. You couldn't get rid of them. And we got lousy. We used to be as lousy as pet coons. Well, they had a sort of a fumigator or whatever you call it, where they take your clothes and they put it in this, and it gets steamed, to try and kill them. But I think it used to hatch them instead. That's good. Oh my God. The lousiest could be.
You mentioned the barracks. It was just, were they heated at all?
Through the winter months, unless it was good and cold, that we used to have a little charcoal fire one end of the hut and one on the other end. And here you're working during winter months, your clothes are soaking wet. You come in, you've got no place to dry them. Well, everybody can't dry their stuff around a little wee tiny fire like that, so an odd time you can dry off your socks at least. But you jump into frozen clothes in the morning. And at work, if you're marching in or something, there's a puddle of water, you don't go around it, you go through it. So you can imagine, in the cold weather, what kind of shoes you got to put on in the morning. It's a wonder that we didn't get arthritis and rheumatism 10 times worse. No mitts to work with, it's cold, because in Japan, it gets, say, 30 or 28, 20, it's to say 35 above, but it still snows, you get 2 feet of snow. So, I mean, it's cold. Here, you got running shoes on, you got no mitts, you're not dressed heavy, you're cold in the morning, so you got to wait until that sun comes out to get warmed up. So we used to freeze quite a bit, too.
When you worked in the mines, were the Japanese people with you, or was it just all prisoners?
Just all prisoners.
And you would have guards? Would the guards watch?
Yeah. I had guards watching us and telling us what to do, and make sure that we do our work.